you come over here and sit, and I'll just direct this at. Hey, we do it this way.
What? Oh yeah.
Seems to be working. All right, let me hear you say something. Say hi. Hello to Fairbanks. Say hi to your sister.
Oh.
Yeah. Say hi, Janet, at least. Well, give me my glasses and I'll try it.
Okay, say hello to all your relatives.
Name them.
No.
I'm going to hear all of this here that you said.
Yeah, hello everybody.
Not good enough.
You can probably do it. Maybe the battery. Hey, what's in this other camera? How long has it been on?
We've got 400. What was it like here?
When?
Say before anybody moved in, the natives. What do you know what they thought about?
I really don't know. I just don't know. Mm. Anything that I would say would just be conjecture.
What was it like when you first came here?
We first came here in the summer of 1950 on a visit, 4th of July weekend, and it was a quiet little town. It was very, very pretty and clean, nothing much to catch your eye as far as buildings were concerned. Just the landscape was very attractive. There were, I don't really know how many people were here at that time, probably not more than 25. There were miners that had come in from the creeks for the holiday, but there weren't a lot of people. In 1955, when we bought the place, there were about 15 or 16 people that lived here. Of those, there were two preschool kids, the Lannings, and there was a girl that was 12 or 13 years old that was the daughter of the NC storekeeper. The town hadn't changed very much as far as buildings are concerned. In fact, I don't think there had been a building built in the 5-year interim. There may have been, but I'm unaware of it.
So they were all just basically the same buildings you have now?
No, there have been buildings built since then. There are probably twice as many buildings, or maybe three times as many buildings now as there at that time. Yeah, easily.
That doesn't mean they all live here year-round.
No.
So it's just mostly buildings that people stop, you know, for summer houses and things like that.
Well, not really. Maybe half summer houses and half permanent houses. I mean, for year-round residents, like Wood's house has been built since we've been here, and the Gertler's house, both those houses that Gertler's have, and Gil Thompson's, and the two beyond Gil Thompson's, Bill Taylor's built two. Flegel's have a house that's been built since I was here. There are probably a half a dozen cabins back of the church, and incidentally the church was built since I've been here, and that chalet that going along towards the school was built since we came, and all of the buildings that are out on the Tofty Road are new buildings. So yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, there are more than I had thought of when I was... Right.
So, how were the people situated here? Were they...
I mean, as far as what kind of work they did?
Yeah.
There were three people that worked for the old Alaska Road Commission, and there are still three people that work for them. They're not the same three.
Mm-hmm.
There was no school here at the time. There was the post office and the U.S. Commissioner, both the positions held by Gus Benson. The NC store was on its last legs, and then in the flood of 1956, they decided to close it down altogether.
So that's when they first closed down?
Right. Right. There was an ice jam in May, early May of 56, and there was water at shoulder height in the post office. That's DeLima's cabin. You know which one's DeLima? It's the one near the NC property.
Oh, yeah.
That nice looking log cabin. Anyway, there was a lot of water then. But it only stayed about 24 hours, and it dropped rapidly once the ice jam broke.
How was the hot springs? Was it the same as it was when you first came here, or did you make some...
Well, the springs themselves are unchanged, and as far as we know, the temperature and the flow is unchanged. We've had several different greenhouses in the 22 years, or nearly 22 years, that we've owned the property. The old buildings have pretty much been torn down. We still have a few, but there was a 5-room cabin that we lived in for a number of years, and there were a couple of little buildings around that were torn down. There's a new road, and there's a new bridge. The old bridge was washed out in the flood of 56. The old bridge is in that picture of 1939 that you got from Thompson.
Yeah.
There.
When did they put in that other steel bridge thing out there?
I think that was completed in 1961.
Did they do that for the road that just came in, or
right.
Because the old bridge was just getting old?
No, there was after that one bridge was washed out during the flood, it was completely washed out. A temporary bridge was put in, and, excuse me, that temporary bridge was just on pilings, driven pilings with timbers and a deck. There was no superstructure of any sort. There was a couple of ropes along the side, so kids couldn't fall off. One drunk did. One night fell into the snow. No. It was in the winter time and the snow was pretty deep, and he was lucky and fell into the snow.
Yeah, I can see. Wow.
In 1969, when there was the forest fire here, there was a fire trail that was pushed through from the Tofty Road to beyond Bertha Mason's.
Really didn't have any problems with that fire.
Well,
come closer.
It came on up over the hill, and it was enough to cause considerable concern here, because the wind blew hard, and there was one night, in fact it was June 21st of 1969, the longest day of the year, you could feel the heat from the fire, the wind
comes in waves.
Yeah, the wind carried it to, and it was frightening, there's no question about it. And it was uncertain just how.
What would it be like if it was, you know, if it came to here? Would there be very many people here, you think? Or?
Oh, it's hard to say if people would have left because of that or not. It certainly would have scarred the area and made it look pretty bad for quite a while. But it's surprising now when you go through some of the area that was burned over doesn't look all that bad. Some of it does.
We're going to take a quick bath. Okay?
Sure. There were 300 firefighters here at the
stationed
time.
Stationed here?
Yeah, for much of the summer.
Were they working, or were they just staying here for a...
Well, you know how it is with firefighting. It was a lark for a while. There were times when they were out really fighting the fire early in the situation, but after a while it got so big that they couldn't really do much about it.
So they just sort of just kick back and watch and made sure.
Yeah. Oh, they had a number of V8 tractors here, and they had helicopters galore.
Mm-hmm. Would you have left? I mean, if this place was just...
No. No, we would have stayed. I mean, the water would have kept coming out of the ground. But it would have altered the appearance of the property tremendously. I still feel sad driving through some of those burned areas. Even though it's been nearly eight years since the fire, it still reawakens the original emotions. Also, it angers me. That too was a cigarette. Started that.
Really?
Burned 180,000 acres. The bridge at Livengood collapsed because of it. Man was killed. All because of a damn cigarette. Presumably it was a cigarette. And over $1 million in costs for fighting the fire. Okay. Enough of the lecture.
So not much has changed since you've been here, actually. It's all been the same.
No, there have been some substantial changes.
Like the school and...
Right. The school is one, and the hangar is another. Cy Hetherington built the hangar. Oh, must have been along about 63 or so. When was it Cy built that hangar? And 3 years ago, Lee Woods from Anchorage started a fish processing plant out at the river, and that's made quite a change.
Brought in a lot of people.
Well, it hasn't brought in a lot of people, but it's made it so that there's quite a little income. Or has been for 2 years. Last year wasn't so good. But I had never visualized a fishery here. It just never occurred to me that there would be. But between selling the fish, and which are frozen and have been shipped to Seward, or sold outside as frozen fish, and the eggs that are processed and sent to Japan. I have no idea what the total income from that is, but it's it makes an impact for quite a number of people.
Is that still going on? That's not still going on.
Yeah, presumably it will operate again this summer when the fish is running. It's located out at the river, the landing, 3 miles from here.
So a lot of people live off of that in Manly, Hot Springs?
Well, for the time that it's in operation, yes. There aren't so many Hot Springs residents themselves involved. I should amend that. Maybe half of the people you could regard as residents, and the other half just come for that specific purpose. But it affects quite a few people. There's last year they must have had about 10 people working there at the plant itself. And then there are the people that do the fishing with nets and wheels and using their kicker boats, hauling the fish back and forth.
What about the hot springs itself? I mean, has it been used basically for the, is that what it's been said attracted very many people to stay here, or?
Well, the hot springs themselves are probably a factor, but it's only one of several. The setting is a factor, I'm sure. It's for a good number of people, it's a nice, quiet little town to live in. It's pretty. I would say it's fairly clean, and the people get along pretty well together. There's none of the typical feuding that you so frequently hear about in small communities. There are certainly differences, but as far as any long-range feuds and bitter hatreds, I'm not aware of this.
Well, what do you think the future for Manly Hot Springs would be?
I don't know that it's going to change remarkably in the future.
Say about 5 years.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know in which direction it's going to go. presumably if we go through with plans for hotel, swimming pool, baths, there will be some more people here as tourists, particularly in the summertime, hopefully in the wintertime. There have been people in recent years that have come here with dogs. This seems to be on an upswing. Whether this will continue growing or whether it will regress, I really don't know. I can see that there will be a small increase in population, but just because it is a pleasant place for people to have homes here and to live here. It may be that there something will occur with the Bean Ridge Corporation that will alter the employment picture. It's possible that a timber industry could develop with timber that's on Bean Ridge land. I think it's possible that a peat industry could develop here, but it doesn't appear to be as promising as timber to me, in that there are other areas that have peat that are closer to transportation hubs that would be less costly, but it's still not impossible. I don't see any increase in mining, but I'm not versed in mining. It's gold in the area and a little tin, and I'm sure that the heyday of that is long past.
Do you have any questions? I'm not sure. Would you like to put in anything else? The subject of management experience?
Oh, I should probably talk about the greenhouses and what we produce in there. Unfortunately, I haven't kept records, so I can't give you information on quantities, but we produce some tomatoes and cucumbers and melons, different kinds of melons, cantaloupe, honeydew, Persian, and we have produced a few watermelons, but for some reason or other, the watermelon don't do as well as the cantaloupe could. And we have a few grapevines. They don't produce many grapes. Produce a lot of vine.
Yeah. Does that affect the community at all?
Well, mostly.
They use it very much.
Right. We sell quite a few tomatoes and cucumbers locally, and almost all of the cantaloupe are consumed locally. A few get away from here, but mostly they're eaten here. We hope to expand.
How many acres is that out there? I mean, what's the size of that greenhouse you have now?
It's 72 feet wide and 120 feet long, which is about one-fifth of an acre. The Hot Springs property itself, the original homestead, was 278 acres.
So you figure you can plant all of that?
No, no. But I don't know how many acres could be under cover in a greenhouse. But there's a considerable area of ground that is warm ground or unfrozen ground from the bathhouse up past the greenhouse. It's possible to scrape back the snow and shovel in thawed ground any time of year. That is in the winter time. The hot springs do not significantly alter the air temperature for growing, but they do alter the soil temperature favorably.
So that's pretty good. Thank you, guys.
I hope you can come back in the summertime and see the things in the greenhouse.
We don't know what I'm going to do this summer at all.
And hopefully we'll have some new baths that you can try out.
I should tell my dad. I've been gone for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Sure, bring the family down.
What family?
All your brothers and sisters.
Actually, I've got one sister. She's 16. And all the rest are just 14 and under.
They count too, regardless of age.
Actually, I have to work hard this summer. Bring up some money to pay off my dad.
Your Christmas?
No. Yeah, Christmas. Yeah, sounds about right. An unwanted Christmas present. For me, at least. His dad didn't have to be there. You want to do the part about the school?
No.
Oh, yes, you can. I mean, I've only attempted two. You sat down most of two of them. So, you should know me. Did you listen to Kurt? What he said? What's some subjects we could ask? Some things we could ask? Question? You said that I didn't listen to. Can you say you might get it?
Okay, when did you first come to Manly?
Well, Chuck and I came here together in the summer of 50. And then we purchased the property in 55.
Were there any differences to you about then and now?
Well, from a school teacher's point of view, and I take it that's the way you want this one, is I noticed a difference in the town's population then, you know. Where there is no school, there are no children. Or if the children are there, they're preschool children. And usually when they get to be school age, then they have to go to where a school is, or they take correspondence. And that was the case here. At that time, there was one family that had preschool children. And then there was the NC store manager, and his wife had an adopted daughter, and she took correspondence. Mm-hmm. And when we moved here, there was, with no school, our daughter had correspondence the first year. And
what did you call in for, a teacher or a tutor?
No, I taught.
Or you sent her?
I was a certificated teacher then, and I had taught 1 year in Fairbanks. So I taught her, but a family could have taught if one parent had the equivalency of a high school degree. So it was it was no problem.
When did the school start?
The following year. We moved in 55, and in the fall of 58, there were 10 school children. The Woods, or the Black, Stanley Dale, you interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
He was married at the time, and his wife had children by a previous marriage, and there was enough to make 10 school children in town for that year, and that put us on what they called a special school status. And in August of that year, we were okayed. The community had to provide a building, which we did. It was the log building at the bottom of the hill. And that's a 16 by 20 log building. And I had my certificate. And the first day school, we opened right on schedule. But I didn't have any books or any school supplies. Chuck built a couple of tables, and we brought in blazo boxes, painted a couple of plywood board but school held every day. We were able to improvise and with books and pencils and paper.
Yeah.
Very few books. And we went that way for 2 months. It was on Halloween when the shipment of books came in.
Mm.
And that was a big holiday for us that year.
Yeah. Can imagine.
How many grade numbers did you have?
There were eight, first through eight. Uh-huh. Right. And we had the school in that building for 2 years, and the school population grew to 19 in that 16 by 20 log cabin. So Chuck built this place, and we had the school in half of this building. And we take these blazo boxes,
mm-hmm,
and stack them from floor to ceiling, and it would provide a partition between the home and the school,
mm-hmm,
and offer a lot of storage space for the school. So it worked out quite well. And we had the school there till 63, and then our oldest had reached junior high school level, so we went into town. And that's when they got the mobile unit in that we still had.
Hmm.
So I was in town for 5 years and then came back here again. And this brings my total teaching years to retirement this year.
Hmm. How many years was that in town?
19. But I was in the military, so I have enough to make it 20. So that's 14 years here. A total of 14.
Any more questions? How do you think the school would be? What do you think the situation would be school for school in about another 5 years in the future?
The school population is such that you can have, if you had two families that would move, then it would put the school population in jeopardy again as far as the school being open. With you could have two families move in, and then it would be close to a two-teacher school. You know, if you had two large families,
mm-hmm,
come in.
Mm-hmm. So you'd like to see that happen. That's what you heard from all the other people.
I think it's very important to be able to maintain the school in the village if it's at all possible,
mm-hmm,
right?
Have you ever had that shut down school for you?
Yes, we've been down to 7, and that's borderline. Mm-hmm. When it reaches that level, then they'll maintain the school for that year, or at the discretion of the commissioner, they can close it if it falls below 6 or below.
Are there any families right now that are planning to move out, or do you think it would be any shortly that would be thinking of moving?
There's talk, but not to put the school population in jeopardy for, you know, next year. I don't expect the school population to be in jeopardy as far as maintaining the school. The year that you moved to Tandon, Gladys, it was that year when the population went down to 7. Yes, the woods have supplied a good number of the school population. I've taught them all.
I have some questions in here. I kind of been made up to the house asking some people. Maybe I can ask you some of these questions.
Is this in reference to the school now?
Yeah,
or is
it kind of around the school area since you're talking about it?
Mm-hmm.
This one is about school. Yeah. I have some that have on economics and so forth.
Well, this might be something that Chuck could also come in on then.
Yeah, if he wants to maybe do with this on education. Here's the, I've been asking other people, like, what kind of a person makes a good teacher? I told them, well, pretty soon you might be thinking about another teacher coming into the area. So what is the criteria for a good teacher?
Yeah.
But this is really not a question for you to answer, because it's maybe more for other people, you know. I said you've had a good teacher here for a long time, and now you're going to be looking for a new teacher. What kind of teacher are you going to be looking for? What's a new teacher?
Well, I'd rather answer that question is, my role as far as the choice of the new teacher, I think, should be a very neutral one.
By saying a neutral one, you're not putting any specifics in the teacher. If they want a native teacher or if they want a married teacher or anything, you're not specifically saying any kind of teacher.
Not only that, I think that the voice of the community should be listened to very carefully in the selection of the new teacher. As far as using any personal influence in saying, I think the community should choose that teacher, I don't think that I would want to do this.
Okay, but you have a general idea. You've been in this community for a long time, so you have a general idea of a specific kind of a character in a teacher. Do you think a teacher will have to walk a thin line, a fairly thin line? Do you think a teacher has to be an undrinker and things like this?
No. I think that although there are differences of opinion politically in the community, the people have very independent views on their religion in the community. I think there are differences of opinion on things like drinking in the community. I think I don't have any, I couldn't state to you that the quality in the good teacher here would be a non-drinker, you know, or, although I don't think a quality of a good teacher would be one who drinks a lot, you know, but people here do respect independent thinking. This is largely a Republican camp, and I'm a Democrat. I take an occasional drink, and I don't think that, and I have partied with every family in the community. I don't think that it hurt my status as a teacher. At least they've never come and I don't know that it has.
How about the parents? Are they really concerned with the children? And how close a contact have you been keeping with the teacher, with yourself?
Very, but as soon as there is anything in a school situation that I think a parent should know, I contact them immediately. Instead of having formal conferences, you know, I will have a conference in the fall and in the spring. I don't believe in this approach. I believe when the parent, there's something that I think the parent should know, they should come to me. And I also feel that when I hope I have made them feel that if they think that there's something that I don't know, that they know, that they would also feel quite free in coming to me. We make it a standard welcome. And I think the children do this too. They practiced it. So if you want to visit the school, you're free to come, and you don't have to wait for an invitation. You know, if you want to come for if you would have come to town, you wanted to visit the school, all you had to do was come to the school. And I make this a standard invitation that formally at the beginning of every school year, although I've taught here for 14 years, and they all know it from knowing me personally. Also, most of the children that I've taught, or many of the children that I've taught, I've known them from the day they were born, like Gladys, for instance. And I think that this helps tremendously. The more you know about somebody, the easier it is to teach.
That's true. The schools have changed from what they were, state operated, I imagine.
Uh-huh.
Now they're a new
regional, right.
Regional. What difference is this going to make in the school?
I favored it. I taught in the system before they had the state operated, when you went direct to Juno, and then under the state operated, and now under the regional. And the closer you get that administration to you, and you can cancel out a lot of levels of administration in between, you're just a lot better off.
Do you see the difference? Do you think you see the difference now between state operated and the new REA? I haven't worked myself. I haven't worked under the new REA.
Okay,
I
I'll just
work under the unorganized borough school.
Okay, I'll just give you an example. There used to be a time when all of my paperwork went direct to Juno. And then to bridge it, they started state-operated school. But you still sent some reports to Juno, and some reports went to Anchorage, and then some went from Anchorage to Juno, and then they came back to me. So then they started the system where they had a superintendent at the regional level. Well, there are some things that I still sent direct to Juno. Some things went to Anchorage. Some things went to the regional superintendent. But all of the things that went to the regional superintendent would have to go on to Anchorage. The ones that went to Anchorage, I imagine a lot of them went on to Juno. So there were these unnecessary levels. When it came to a big policy decision, the superintendent didn't have the authority to say yes or no. And now you have a superintendent in the region, and it goes to the superintendent and it stops there. It just simplifies things.
You don't have to answer this question, because it's kind of almost a personal question between yourself and the students. And you have approximately 15 students you're
mm-hmm.
working with. Students are still taking standardized tests, and you have your own measurements. And I was wondering just how the students are probably working as far as their level is concerned, their age level, let's say, and how are their standing? Are they below their age level, grade levels and age levels, or are they working probably to address some students to their, I imagine some would be higher, some lower, but how are they grade wise?
I think this school would not be a good example of, you know, the student that is a year and a half behind in reading skills. We do have a high percentage of above average performers in the school.
Do you have the need of special services that you probably are offered in a larger school district if you don't have?
Yes, I do have. I have to go outside of the school a lot for enrichment material. I also have to go. I have one student who, when he came to me as a first grader, he had already been placed in a special education class. And of course, I need special materials for him. But even with your average student, you're going to go outside of your school a lot for materials.
There's some talk about the new REA taking over, and they're also going to be giving a standardized text for the schools. Are you aware of this?
Yes.
How do you feel about it?
I like the idea of standardized text, as long as you have the opportunity to enrich. Enrich and supplementary materials. But I have no objection to having basic standardized tests or materials in a classroom, providing you have the opportunity for supplementary materials. That doesn't scare me. I think, as a matter of fact, my feeling with, and I've expressed this often in education classes, they'll say, it is not, you know, to spend time preparing your own curriculum. I like the idea of prepared curriculum. My situation in a one-room school, if I started to prepare my own curriculum for that class, I wouldn't have time to teach the children. And I have enough faith in professional curriculum specialists that they can handle basic needs, but certainly you need supplementary materials to fit unique situations.
There's different conceptions about one class, having multi classes in one classroom in school. Some theorists go along with it, and others say, well, it's a dead duck and it should not only be practiced. But how do you feel about it?
Well, this is where my heart is. It just happened that I also lived here, but my heart is in a one-room school. And I could probably sum my feeling about a one-room school in two words. It has room for review and room for preview. So, and it's a built-in system. So if you have a child who needs remedial work, he gets it, because there are levels below him. You also have a built-in system for enrichment, because you'll have second graders, third graders, who are suddenly interested in a concept that they might hear even as high as an eighth grade level. And when they are listening in the classroom, that enrichment just is absorbed, and it doesn't make much of a break in their day. They don't have to go to a special class in this building to hear it.
Yeah, it's different. It's different in our school. It seems like it's harder to remember things. You know, I'm in my junior year right now. It's still harder to remember things as they go along. I think it's seemed like it'd be a lot easier if it wasn't in the class too. And then just pick back, but I know. That would be easy to pick up too.
Yeah, it's amazing when you know when something interests you or you need something and you hear it talked about, you'll stop and you'll listen. And so this works in very well in a one-room school situation. Sometimes the teacher, and this has happened to me, I can cite an actual experience where I had a sixth grader who had a potential for being an above-average student. But her spelling was just outrageous, and she had missed those skills at the primary level. Now, it would have been disastrous to her, you know, if I would have started having separate lessons for her at that time in spelling at that level. But I could unobtrusively, by my classroom arrangement, distract her attention whenever we started working on concepts at that level with the primary children. And she herself would then stop and she'd listen in, and none of the other children knew that she was listening to it because she wasn't participating actively. You know, she was listening to the smaller children participate, but she was taking it in. And there was a very pronounced growth in her spelling. And then, of course, we also did other things. And as a reward at the end of the year, we said, you've done so beautifully that why don't we send you to the spelling bee in Anchorage? You know, and we did, you know. And she said, you know, I think I'll come back, you know, at least in the top half dozen. And she came back fifth, you know, which was, it just so happened. But it was one of those cases of a built-in review system in the classroom. And it worked out beautifully for her. You know, I'm talking about Carol Lee.
I'm not sure, because I wasn't here when they were questioning you or giving some questions. But I was wondering, when you first started teaching here, were you teaching this old school over here?
Yes, and I mentioned this. Mm-hmm. And we moved out of it when I had 19 students. When I planned the Christmas program that year, I had to plan it with the idea that when the children got on their stage, that they wouldn't be able to move much than just right around there. Because by the time they got on stage and the community came in, there wasn't room to move around. It was quite an experience.
What year was it that they moved?
We started school here in 1958.
And you moved to the new school?
No, then we had half of this building as the school. Mm-hmm. And then in 63, that building was brought in.
So you saw a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising that you were here.
The school had closed in, there was a school here in the early years, but it closed in 1932. And then, of course, it was reopened in 1958.
And it closed probably due to the impression. The depression really didn't affect the school that much, I don't think, in Alaska.
Well,
I wonder why they closed.
But this was a community that was served as a supply point for gold for a mining industry, and mining was probably the highest production in the first decade or so, and then went downhill.
Well, do you have any more questions? I ran out.